As mentioned, I'll be teaching a course on computational physics. There'll be 3 lectures today, tomorrow, Thursday, and 2 tutorials in the afternoon. So I thought today I'd give you an introduction to Mathematica, since many researchers here in the building use Mathematica, and I don't know your background. Some of you may already be familiar with it, but for others it might be new. Tomorrow I'll give a lecture on computational physics in general, just introducing the topic and some of the highlights. And on Thursday I want to introduce the Julia programming language. Sometimes you want to do calculations that are more numerical, maybe look for eigenvalues in a matrix that is rather large. And then in these cases, if Mathematica is not efficient enough, there are other languages, for example Python, Fortran, C++, and so on. And Julia is one of the languages that is rather modern and easy to use, and that is then accompanied by a tutorial on Thursday afternoon as well. So since this is a course for you, I want you to interrupt me anytime you have any questions, so anything is unclear or there are any problems. And I'm going to be using some Mathematica notebooks here, and I'll make them available to you on the SciWiki. I don't think I have write access, but I hope that one of you can help me put the notebooks on the SciWiki, then you can look at them afterwards. So in the beginning here, I want to do something rather basic. Can you see this, or can you change the lights to presentation mode? The lights are over there. Oh, very good. Thank you. Amazing. So Mathematica, you all have Mathematica installed on your notebook, I believe. So let's begin with some rather basic things. They're boring to everybody, I assume. If you type something, 2 + 3, hit Shift Return, then Mathematica evaluates the result. Oops, sorry. I'd rather want to do that with a new kernel. I don't want to have any results from previous calculations in there. So 2 + 3 = 5. Square root of 4 = 2. And the square root of 2 remains unevaluated because there's no exact solution for that. So Mathematica is what they call a symbolic algebra system, where if there's an exact solution, Mathematica will calculate it. And if there's no exact solution, then things remain just unevaluated and can be used later on. If you want to get a particular numerical value of that, then there's this function n. N of square root of 2 is whatever. Mathematica uses apparently 6 digits in this case. And compared to other systems, you know that notice the 2 peculiarities. First, if you write a function, for example, square root, they all start with an uppercase letter. That's just a convention Mathematica uses, square root, sine, tangent, they all do that. And if you call a function, you have to use a square bracket around that. Round parentheses are only used to group elements. Hence, square root looks as funny as that. So can you all see the screen in the back, in case you're interested in the lecture? Very good, very good. There is pi. Pi, of course, is irrational, so it's just printed as pi. And if you want, you can calculate the numerical value to 6 digits. And if you want to know pi to 1,000 digits, then, of course, you can do that as well. And you see it's essentially instantaneous. And the 10-millisecond delay was actually displaying it, not calculating it, right? These days, 1,000 digits of pi are a piece of cake. You can also do other calculations. That's 10 to 100 plus 10 to the 101, which looks, of course, like that. And as I mentioned earlier, if something in an expression is unknown, it just remains unevaluated. So if you look at x plus 1, we haven't defined what x is. The result is just x plus 1. Mathematica normalizes or sorts the expressions, so its output is 1 plus x. X equals 5. Let's define x. The result is 5. And if we now look at x plus 1, the result is 6. Because x is known, 5 is put in, and then 5 plus 1 can be calculated. The result is 6. And that is output. And if you write the expression x equals dot, sorry, let me scroll down a bit, that serves to undefine x. Now x has no value anymore. And if you look at x again, its output is x again, because it doesn't have a definition. If you look at the graphical user interface, you'll also notice that the color of the variable x changes. Unknown variables are dark blue, and known values are black. It's not easy to see the difference, but if you scrutinize the screen, you will have seen that x changed color between black and blue. And now it's blue. Yeah, that's what I mean. There are other functions. For example, if you want to know the millionth prime number, there it is. Yeah, that makes sense, 15 million or something. And you can solve equations. So here you solve an equation, x squared plus 1 equals 0. And you'll notice that in this equality here, you have to divide it with two equal signs. A single equal sign defines a variable. And two equal signs expresses an equality without changing any values. That's an important difference. So we solve x squared plus 1 for x. And the result is an expression, a list with two solutions, because there are two solutions. By default, Mathematica assumes complex numbers. The first x is minus I, and the second x goes to I. And the curly braces are Mathematica's notion for a list. A list is something like a set, except it has a particular order. And since you can also solve systems for multiple variables, each solution is again a list. So you have a list of lists, a list of solutions, and each solution can have multiple variables. But since we only have a single variable, so this solution, x equals minus I, contains only a definition for one variable. Mathematica can do integrals, derivatives, limits, and so on. Here's the limit of 1 over n as n goes to infinity. And this arrow here is typed as minus and then larger than. That, of course, is 0. Or the sum of 1 over 2 to the n, for n goes from 0 to infinity, is 2. And with question mark, you can access the help system. There's also a menu item where you can click something and get help. Help for square root and help for the sum function, which outputs more here. And if you go to this, if you click this double arrow here, then a new window appears with even more help. And every time there's an arrow on the left, you can click it, and then even more details appear. Mathematica's help system is quite extensive, and parts of it even available online on Mathematica's website. So if you have questions, even some about, say, Chebyshev polynomials in general, that's a good go-to place. If you're interested in Mathematica, I highly recommend looking at it. Now I need to go back to my other window. Hey, whoof, aha. Oh, unhappiness here. Where did it go? There, very good. These are just the very basics. I don't want to bore you with the details more, because most of you know it. If you're unfamiliar with it, it takes some getting used to. Do you have more questions on these basic operations on Mathematica? Okay. By way of introduction, I'm research technologies group leader. I'm a staff scientist here. I'm something in between a physicist and a computer scientist. I'm located in office number 350. If you're interested in numerical methods or computational physics, feel free to stop by my office and chat with me. Or if you have questions, you can also find me there. Now, if you are used to mathematics, then you know that mathematicians make a very strict distinction between a function and the value of a function at a particular point. And if you got the same physics education as me as an undergraduate, you will know that physicists glance over that. F of x, function, value of a function of x, same thing, who cares? And Mathematica makes a very sharp distinction between these two things. There is a function, it's just the map from one set to another set. And the value of a function or an expression is just a single value that could be an expression. And you need to keep these two separate if you want to make sense out of Mathematica. So I'm going to have some examples here about functions. This is how you define a function in Mathematica. The sine function is built in. And we define a function f. And we define a function where f of x is sine of x. And Mathematica is internally based on pattern matching. So this x underscore is a pattern which is used to define the function argument. And this is the way to define a function in Mathematica. You need to get used to it. So let's define it that way. And the result is sine of x. That's the function. And if we evaluate f of 1, that is sine of 1. Of course, sine of 1 is not simplified further, because that's an abstract thing. I mean, we could evaluate it numerically. And f of x is sine of x. And f of q is sine of q. So the fact that we use the name x to define the function is not remembered. It is not relevant. You can, of course, evaluate the function f anywhere for x or q or a or anything. It has nothing to do with any variable x that might exist in the environment. And you can also evaluate f at 2 pi. And the result is 0, of course, because it's, Mathematica knows that sine of 2 pi is 0. Now let's define a global variable a, a global constant a, and set it to 1. You see how it changed from blue to black? Okay, next time you'll catch it. You see the G further down, and the G is still blue because you haven't defined it yet? There you go. Now let's redefine the function f that it's x plus a. That becomes 1 plus x because a has the value 1, so it's inserted right away. And if you evaluate f of 5, the result will be, well, 6. That is boring. Let us undefine a. A is now going to change color from black to blue. And now if we evaluate f to 5, the result is still 6. And the reason is that when Mathematica, when you define this function here, at the time of the definition, the value of a was captured and replaced by 1. So the function definition is 1 plus x. It also didn't remember, Mathematica doesn't remember, that you used a in that case. And if you have variables, then this can get confusing, and you need to be careful about that. Now, let's do the same thing, but let's define the function slightly differently. Let's define a to 1, and let's define a new function, g of x. But now we use the colon equals. And colon equals means that the right-hand side is not evaluated. It's kept as it is, and only when you evaluate g does it look at things. So g of x, and you see Mathematica doesn't output anything. The earlier definition, it output x plus 1. If we look at g of 5, of course, that is 6 as before. If we undefine a and look at g of 5, it's 5 plus a. So if you define a function with colon equals, then the right-hand side is captured as expression. The symbolic expression x plus a is captured and later evaluated. And that is a crucial difference. If this is the first time you encounter a symbolic algebra system such as Mathematica, this might sound strange or confusing, but we'll have a few exercises in this afternoon to drive that point home a bit. And this is both very relevant and important when you do things later on. So this will get important. I'd like to emphasize a bit more the distinction between a function and a value. So 1 is a value, rather trivial. 1 is just 1. And 1 ampersand, this is Mathematica's notation for a function. 1 ampersand is a function that is 1 everywhere. It's a constant function that is 1, and that is different from the value 1. It looks like this. Ampersand just denotes a function. And we can evaluate this function at 3. 1 ampersand is the function. Square bracket 3 evaluates it at the point. So the result, of course, is 1 because the function is 1 everywhere. Let's define this function f of x again. Let's define it to 2x. 2x means 2 times x. And this is a different way of, let me scroll up, sorry, to defining a similar function. If you define a function using this ampersand, then this function has one argument. And this argument is called hash. It isn't called x or y or q or something. It's called hash. It's a strange convention that Mathematica uses. So this is 2 times hash. This is a function that does the same thing as the function f of x above, so 2 times x. And here's the functions 2 times hash, or hash 1. Because the function has one argument. The first argument is called hash 1. So we can evaluate this function at r, and this now looks really cryptic, but it's a neat shortcut notation, so we'll find it. You'll find it in Mathematica notebooks. This is the function 2 times function argument evaluated at r, which of course is 2r, and that's the same way of doing that, 2r. And one place where you encounter a function like this, if you define a matrix, so array is a built-in Mathematica function that creates a matrix. Here we create a 4x4 matrix. And this array function takes as argument a function that specifies the value for each element. And if we want to make each element set it to 2, then we specify the constant function 2. And this is how it looks like. So this matrix form on the right-hand side just produces a nice-looking format for the matrix. Otherwise, you get a list of lists. Now, this, even if you have casually used Mathematica before, this distinction between defining functions with equals and colons equals, and the distinction between functions and values of a function, this might be a bit confusing. Do you have questions for that? Not yet? OK. Maybe it's getting clear. in exercises. And I want to talk about the internal representation that Mathematica uses. If you use it, you want to at least have a high level of understanding how Mathematica functions internally. That helps you understand problems if it doesn't do what you want it to do. So let's talk about the internal representation. Let's look at the rather simple expression a plus 2b plus 3c. And let's look at the internal representation in graphical form, tree form. This is how it looks like. Does it fit on the screen? It does. So Mathematica says plus in the beginning, so it's a sum of several terms. Plus has three children, a times and times. So it's a sum of three terms. The first term is a. The other two terms are products. And these products are, of course, products of 2 and b and 3 and c. Graphical form is nice for getting used to it. But if you want to actually look at larger expressions, it quickly becomes unwieldy. There is this full form way of expressing things, which is more explicit, maybe easier to see. It's the same thing as the tree above, except now it's written in a textual form. There's a function plus that takes three arguments, and a function times that takes two arguments in this case. And it's the same as the expression above, just written explicitly. So this full form is how Mathematica works internally. And if you want to modify expressions or combine sub-expressions or things like that, then it is good to know that this is how things look internally in Mathematica. This expression with curly braces is a list in Mathematica. So it's just that. If you have lists of equal length, you can add them. The addition operation automatically distributes over lists. This is 1 plus a, 2 plus b, 3 plus c. It's just element-wise addition. If you use the list to represent a vector, then this corresponds to vector addition. And this is 2 times a list. So the multiplication also distributes over lists. That also corresponds to scalar multiplication, similar to square root, square root 2, square root 3. There's a function map. Map applies a particular function to every element in the list. So the second argument of map here is the list. And the first argument is a function defined as above. This function is the function x goes to 2x plus 1, or hash goes to 2 hash plus 1, if you use hash as a variable name. And the result is, can you guess?
3, 5, 7.
Exactly. Here we do it slightly differently. That is, again, this function. And the argument to that function is the list, also 3, 5, 7. And if you want to create a list, there's a table function. Table function creates vectors or matrices. The first argument to table is an expression depending on variable, so 2i plus 1. And the second defines on what values I should take. Here I ranges from 0 to 3 in steps of 1 by default. So this gives you a table, 1, 3, 5, 7, for elements for I equals 0, 1, 2, 3. Anytime you want to create a vector or a matrix, you can use the table function. I recommend looking at the documentation because it's quite complex what you can do. You can create two-dimensional elements, or you can make I go backwards from 3 down to 0, or define a step size, and so on. So here I'm using table to create a matrix. Each element of the matrix is set to 1 over I plus j plus 1, where I and j both range from 0 to 3. And that matrix then looks like that. Lots of fractions in there. And this matrix has some particular bad properties if you look at eigenvalues. Here I'm applying a function ff that is not yet defined to vector 1, 2. Nothing happens. And here I map the function ff over 1, 2, so slash add is one of these illegible shortcuts that Mathematica has. He had many of those. It's the same as the map function above. Yeah, let me write it. FF, 1, 2. That's the same thing. Oop. You apply a function FF to every element of the matrix. Let's undefine F. And this is a 2 by 2 matrix, 1, 2, 3, 4. This is how you would input it as a list of lists. And if you output in matrix form, It looks like this. There is an operation flatten in Mathematica, where you have lists of lists of lists, and everything gets flattened in just into a single list. Yeah, let's do it without a matrix form here. It just looks like 1, 2, 3 form, and this then turns into a vector. So this reinterprets the matrix as a vector, essentially. If you have matrices and vectors, you can also index into them. So let's define a vector, 1, 2, a matrix, 1, 2, 3, 4. And this, with this two square brackets, which looks a bit weird, gives you the second element. Elements are counted starting from 1. The second element of V is 2, too boring if you don't answer. And the matrix element 1, 2 should also be 2. Yes, very good. And V of 0 is? It's list, yes. So let's look at the full form of V. Then you see internally V is a thingy with two children, 1 and 2, and the head would be list. We can also use the, what's it called, tree form of the list. And then it looks like this. It's the list 1, 2. And if you look, if you get indices 1 and 2, you get the ones at the bottom. Index 0 is what is called the head of that expression. And if you try to access any other index, you'd get an out of bounds error. Tree form V. Yeah, let's delete that. And so if you have this expression, x plus y, and get the zeroth element, what would that give you?
Sums.
Close. Mathematica calls it plus, but yes. And if you do the tree form, then you actually see that one here. Let me put that back for later on. Plus x, y. You can transpose the matrix M and look at the first element, which gives you the first column, I believe, which is now 1, 3 instead of 1, 2. And the zeroth element of M is
list.
And if you look at the tree form, it's a list of lists. And this is how a two-dimensional matrix is represented internally. OK, you don't seem to be asking many questions. It's probably just a show and tell. That's OK. You can manipulate expressions in Mathematica. You can solve. I think we had this before. This gives two solutions, a list of lists. D is a derivative. D takes a derivative of an expression with respect to a particular variable that appears in that expression. So the derivative of x squared with respect to x is 2x. Yes. If you integrate 2x with respect to x, you get x squared. You can do a definite integral, x squared, x goes from 0 to 1. Then you also get you get a particular value, because the bounds, of course, are plugged into the expression. Clear f, let's undo the definition of f. And let's solve a differential equation. Solve solves mostly algebraic equations. Dsolve solves differential equations. F prime prime, that's the apostrophe, is the notation that Mathematica also uses for derivatives. So this solves the equation f double prime of x equals x. And the unknown is f of x. And the independent variable is x. And the result is, I don't know, it's the wave equation, right? No harmonic? Probably something like sines or cosines. Oh, no. How embarrassing. Haha. Yeah, no. The result is a got confused here. The wave equation is something would be a partial differential equation. It's x cubed over 6. And there are two integration constants here called c1 and c2. And if you give additional constraints, then c1 or c2 might be determined. Yes?
Why did you use clear f instead of f equals dot?
I don't know. I probably wrote this part of the notebook at a different time. But it does the same thing. So I don't presume that you will remember anything, any details of what I tell you here. But you might remember kind of the broad class of features that Mathematica offers. And then later on, if you look at the documentation or look at the notebook, that might help you. get started if you want to address a particular problem. Let's solve a first order ODE, f prime of x equals x. And let's solve for x, for f. And you see this looks different. Do you see the major difference in the input that I chose here? Apart from f prime and f double prime?
F, the solved variable is f instead of f of x.
Yes. So I mentioned earlier that f is a function and f of x is just the value of x, value of f at x. So here I wrote f of x, and then Mathematica says f of x has these values. Here I said I want to have a function, so f is now a function. It has one argument that Mathematica calls x. I don't know, probably because I called this x, it uses the same name. And this is the function that maps x to x squared plus some constant. And so let's define a function f, where we set f of 1 to 1 and f of 2 to 3. And now we look at f of 3. It just remains unevaluated f of 3, because we define this function f only at these two points, 1 and 2. If you look at 2, then it is 3. We can also look, solve more complicated equations. Here we solve f prime of x equals x, same as before, but we give additional constraints. We say f of 0 should be 42, f of 1 should also be 42. We solve for f of x and x. Previously, we had integration constants. Sorry. If I want to give two conditions, I probably should add a second derivative here. And then you don't get any integration constants when you solve it, but rather this has been plugged in. And the 252 and the x here, then make sure that these two additional constraints are satisfied as well. Now, of course, the problem is that solving differential equations, ODEs or PDEs, you know, it's a complicated thing. If you get lucky, you find a solution. Most of the equations that you find in physics, you do not find a solution, or it looks already complicated, the same as in Mathematica. So I'd say Mathematica is about as clever as a reasonably clever person, plus a large book of integration tables of function integrals. But if you can't find something in Mathematica, then sometimes a rather innocuous change could make Mathematica find the solution. So you need to be careful, and you also need to be careful about bugs in Mathematica. It's a piece of software, and sometimes there might be something that is just off, that internally Mathematica encounters in terms, thinks, this is 0 over 0, it's probably 0, and ignores it, and in the end, it's not. So whenever you integrate something or do something complicated, solve a differential equation, you need to check the result. I mean, you can actually plug in the solution, but you need to also use your own brains to actually check the result. Simple things such as substitution something or calculating x plus 1 and so on, these are correct. They are simple computer science algorithms that make it work at all times. But if it's more complex algorithms, such as solving a differential equation, where you need to think about whether solution exists and under what condition it exists and so on, then Mathematica does get it wrong at some points. And of course, what happens mostly is that Mathematica just says there is no solution, and you just know there is actually a solution because the algorithm couldn't find it. So if Mathematica says there is no solution, don't trust it. I mean, it could be right, but don't trust it. Okay, let's look at some expression manipulation. X plus 1 times x minus 1. If you write it out, Mathematica just keeps it. It reorders the terms. It likes to have constants before variables. And if we simplify it, simplify is a function that is misnamed. It doesn't actually simplify it. It just normalizes it. And Mathematica likes to write polynomials by expanding them as a polynomial. So products of polynomials turn into polynomials again. That's minus 1 plus x squared. If we take the same thing and factor it, then Mathematica tries to find factors, and it recovers the original one. You can expand. Sorry. You can expand it, which is the opposite of factorization, and in this kind here, simplification or normalization would be the same as expanding a polynomial. You can collect terms. So here I have a polynomial with x and y in it. And if you collected powers of y, then you first have 3x plus x squared, which has no y in it, and then 3 plus 2x multiplied by y plus y squared. And this can obviously be convenient in some points. You can do a series expansion in Mathematica. Here we take the function 1 over x and expand in the variable x about the value 1 and going up to the fourth power of x. And the result is then this term here. So 2 is the first term, and then x minus 1 squared, since we expand x about 1, it's an expression that is centered around x minus 1. There's apparently no linear term. There's the quadratic term, the cubic term, the quartic term. Oh, no, the linear term is on the right-hand side, on the very right. OK. It's been sorted strangely. So this is the linear term here. And there are higher order terms, and these higher order terms have been dropped. So the series expansion adds a notation. Let me just remove the normal here. So that's then plus additional terms of the order x minus 1 to the fifth. And since you can't do any other calculations with that, you can normalize a series expansion, and then it drops this O term. And this is expression. This is the value of expression. And dot slash replaces something in an expression. Pattern matching and replacement is fundamental in Mathematica. So it takes x, and wherever x appears, it replaces it by epsilon plus 1. So then it looks like this, which is what you expected. And by the way, neat thing, Mathematica also does Greek numbers. So if you press escape and then epsilon, then escape again, it actually looks like a Greek number. And I mean, it's more complicated to type. But depending on how you want your notebooks to look like, this can look nice. You can also take 1 over epsilon plus 1 and expand it in epsilon about the value 0. That's the same as taking 1 over x and expanding it in x about the value 1, right? And you see, this is the same term as here. Yeah, no. Of course, you can't see it. Let me recover the original one. It's the same thing, plus this fifth order term. When you define a function, functions are defined via pattern matching. I earlier said that if you define a function, then the left-hand side is the function argument with an underscore appended. You can also provide a constraint on that pattern here. So this means f of x equals x squared, but only if the function argument is an integer. So we evaluate f of 2, it's 4. But if we evaluate it with 2 plus 1, what is the result?
F of 2 plus 1?
F of 2 plus 1, yes. Because there's no definition that matches, because 2 plus 1 is not an integer. It just remains unevaluated. And if you have a complicated notebook, a complicated expression, doing this kind of pattern constraints can help prevent errors that it only matches in certain cases. Here, this is another case of pattern replacement. We take the value 2, and this is the pattern how we replace. We take any value, we call that value x, and replace it by x squared. This matches the term 2, and thus replaces 2 by 2 squared. Gives 4. This is the expression that we have above. And we place here in this expression x minus 1 with epsilon. And you see that is not quite what you expected. Pattern matching in Mathematica does not take any arithmetic identities into account. If you replace x by epsilon plus 1, it takes all the x's, replaces it by x plus 1, and then does certain arithmetic simplifications. For example, plus 1 minus 1 equals 0. But if you replace the pattern x minus 1 by epsilon, you really need to have x minus 1 in the expression tree that you would see in tree form. So here, this minus 1 plus x is the same as x minus 1. If you expand x minus 1 and minus 1 plus x in tree form, you'll see it. But this x here is not x minus 1. I mean, you have minus x plus 2. There's no x minus 1. The pattern doesn't match. And thus, it remains unreplaced like this one here. So on one hand, Mathematica has this high-level mathematical infrastructure about solving differential equations and simplifying expressions, expanding, factorizing, and so on. But underlying is a very different computer science language that knows nothing about the mathematical rules. It's just about pattern matching and expression trees and whatever happens internally. And this does not know anything about arithmetic rules. So if you say, my pattern is replace x minus 1 by epsilon, that's what it does. It walks through the tree. If it finds an x minus 1, it gets replaced by epsilon. If it's not x minus 1, it's not replaced. And x is, in this case, not the same as x minus 1. And that you can write x as x minus 1 plus 1, that's not known to the lower level language. So on this lower level language, Mathematica is a computer science project. This pattern matching is incredibly powerful, very elegant. And based on this lower level language, Mathematica implements the higher level arithmetic expressions. And if you want to implement your own algebra, which doesn't have addition and multiplication and complex numbers, if you have some other group or some other mathematical structure, you can reuse the same pattern matching below and the same power of Mathematica and defining functions and replacing. But of course, the higher level overstructure would not work. For example, the simplification would not work. You'd have to define your own operators. You probably don't want to call it plus. You probably want to call it O plus, a plus with a circle around it or something. But you can do that in Mathematica, and that is a very powerful tool then. Okay. Yeah, let's take the series expression, the expression here, and expand it about x equals 1 and take the 2 powers of x. That's what the 1 and 2 means. Then we get this here. And why am I doing this? I don't recall. Apologies. I was probably something explaining. Yeah. And the tree form of a series expression is actually a series data. So series data. Oof. Oh, yes. This is the way how a series expansion is stored internally. When you output it here, then it looks like x minus 1, x minus 1 squared, x minus 1 cubed, and so on and so forth. But internally, it's actually stored differently. It's a series data structure. X about 1, a list, these are the coefficients, 1 minus 1, 1 minus 1, which are the factors in front of it, and 5 and 1. This is just a different expression of this one. And if you have this series data expression, you can also very efficiently get series coefficients. This would be the coefficient in quant of the quadratic term, which is 1, which is this plus sign here. Oof, interesting. Apologies, I reused the notebook from last year. I didn't have time to clean it up. I was going to do that in the hour before the lecture, fire alarm, and so on and so forth. I don't know what this one does here. Extension goes to I. Interesting. Maybe one of you can read the documentation. Maybe we can find it out online here. Let's see what it does if we don't do that. Oh, apparently, if you call factor in Mathematica, it factorizes over the real numbers. Mathematica, by default, assumes that any numbers that you pass in, any arguments, are complex numbers. Most of the time, that's a reasonable default. Most of the time, it has no difference between complex numbers and real numbers. But apparently, when you factorize a polynomial, by default, it assumes real numbers. So 1 plus x squared doesn't factorize in the real numbers. And then if you pass this argument, extension goes to I, then it factorizes over the complex numbers. And then the polynomial does factorize. You find this out, of course, if you look at the definition of factor. Factors are polynomial over the integers. Oh, it can also do polynomials in modular arithmetic. Very good. OK, this is a whirlwind tour of some of the more dry parts of Mathematica, the underpinnings and so on. Mathematica also helps with visualization. So with graphics, for example, you can plot a sine wave that plots the function sine of x. X goes from 0 to 2 pi, which of course looks like that. And there are hundreds, literally hundreds of additional options you can give to plot and so on. So let's, the same thing as above, let's plot sine of x, where x goes to 0 to 2 pi, with a frame, a black frame style, background color, and so on and so forth. And then it looks like this. So you can do anything. And you can even add an interactive element to it, where some of the parameters, for example, you can have a factor in front of the sine or something, and that then adds a slider up here. And as you move the slider, the graph adjusts automatically. And you can also take a notebook and publish it on the web, and that becomes interactive like that. So you can almost write a paper in Mathematica and put some plots in the result and have the people play, the readers play with the results and then look at the plots. That is it. I haven't done it, but it could be an interesting project to do. Another way of plotting things is a contour plot. That's a 2D function, sine of x times cosine of y. X and y have the following ranges. And this is how the contour plot looks like. So you know you have one half wave of the sine in the x direction and four half wave, two full waves of cosine in the y direction. And of course, you can adjust the color scheme. And contour plot means kind of you look at it from above and see the valleys and the crests like this. And finally, I'd like to give a bit more detail about how you define your own functions. You also know the factorial function. The factorial of 0 is 1. And the factorial of n is n times the factorial of n minus 1. And the factorial of 1. And now we have two definitions of factorial, right? One for all values of n and one for 0. Which one is Mathematica going to choose if I write this? I mean, which one is Mathematica going to choose for 0? It has a rule built in that it takes prefers the more specific definition. So factorial of 0, it will choose the one in the first line. For all the other definitions, it will choose the one at the bottom. And a factorial of 100 is, of course, blah, blah, whatever it is. Now, you might have heard of the Fibonacci numbers. It's something like the factorial, except the recursion is too deep. Actually, this is a bit complicated. This is already the advanced version. Let me simplify that. And comment that out. How is that? Slash? Yeah, let's ignore that. So the Fibonacci number of n is the 1 of n plus 1, of n minus 1, plus the 1 of n minus 2. I think Fibonacci, the guy, Filius of another guy, Bonacci, studied how rabbits multiplied. And these Fibonacci numbers, they grow exponentially. I don't know whether it's exponentially, but they grow quickly. So it is? It probably is, yes. Fibonacci of 0 is 0, Fibonacci of 1 is 1, and Fibonacci of n is the sum of the two previous ones. And if you evaluate it for 1, for 10, then 55. And if we evaluate it for 1,000, then the result is, I should probably stop it now, that it takes too long to calculate. Because for Fibonacci of 1,000, you need to calculate it for 999. And for 998. And for 999, you need to calculate it for 998 and 997. And this goes exponentially like that. So this takes 2 to the 1,000 operations. And that, of course, is takes way longer than the age of the universe. And there's a particular trick in Mathematica where you can memoize the result. You can memorize the result of a function. You can write a function that, as it is evaluated, it remembers the result that it just evaluated. And that's kind of a standing pattern in Mathematica. And that, of course, makes it much faster to evaluate it, because Fibonacci of 1,000, in principle, you only need to do 1,000 calculations to get the result before. And this is this fancy definition that I have here. Let me comment that one out. And let me uncomment this one here. Let's write it like this. The difference is here that I have defined this function kind of twice. So the first definition, Fibonacci of n, is defined as, and then colon equals, it remembers the complete right-hand side. So if I evaluate that, say, for Fibonacci 10, Mathematica will evaluate the right-hand side here, and the right-hand side is another function definition. So while Mathematica is evaluating a function, it will define another function. N now has the value 10. So if you put 10 in here, this reads Fibonacci of 10 equals Fibonacci 9 plus Fibonacci 8. Mathematica evaluate that sum, and then remember this one here in the same way as we defined up here. There's internally a dictionary in PyPL or a hash table or something that's in there, and it will remember it. And let's comment out this one to make clear what's happened. Let's define it like this. Fibonacci 10 is instantaneous, and Fibonacci of 1,000 is also instantaneous. And this is one of the cool things that you can do in Mathematica that will be very difficult in many other languages, for example, Python or C++. Of course, you can do explicit, do dictionaries, blah, 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 blah. But in Mathematica, I mean, it looks weird with this double definition here. But if you get around the syntax, the thing that you can do a calculation and defining a function at the same time, that is incredibly powerful. And this is one of the major strengths of Mathematica. And I just wanted to put this trick here because it's very useful and it's widely used and it's kind of highly non-obvious how to do that. So I'll put it here. You've seen it. And if you're going to need it a year from now, maybe you'll remember and you'll Google for that thing and maybe you'll find it then. Okay. This is a basic introduction to Mathematica. I'm going to spend 10 more minutes to drive down in a few other topics that I have. And or maybe not. Or maybe I do. I can either talk about lists or I can talk about functions and operators. What is more interesting to you? Are you leaning more towards computer science or more towards mathematics and physics? Okay, okay. Who is for lists? Sorry, I couldn't get that list. Okay. And who wants operators? Okay, sorry. I could put the other thing on there.
Are you going to upload both of them?
Or? Yes, yes, yes. Obviously. Obviously, yes. Okay. So I talked about values and functions. And you can actually have functions that take other functions as an input. For example, if you take a derivative of a function, then the derivative takes the other function as input, not just the function value. And that's also sometimes called an operator then in mathematics. So let's do a bit of a warm-up here. Actually, let me just. So I did some calculations. Mathematica now remembers some values, functions I defined earlier. I don't want to get it confused. So I just quit the local kernel. And I'm back. Very good. Everything is fine. So let's define a function f1. This defines the function f to be x squared plus 1. And another way of defining that function is this way. You say I'm using f1 and f2 so that I can use both. But f is the function that maps f to x squared plus 1. And f1 and f2 are equivalent, right? Let's write f1 of 4, f2 of 4. It's the same thing. It's just different ways of defining it. In the second terms, I defined it in a more mathematical way using a function object. And in the first line here, F1 defined it using pattern matching. Now let's talk about operators. So an operator, as I mentioned, is a function that takes as a function as input. So this operator op1 takes an argument f, but f is not a value. F is a function. And the operator is a function that maps x to f prime of x plus x times f of x. It's just some expression. But since f is input as a function, not as a value, we can take a derivative of the function here, f prime of x. And then we can evaluate the derivative of x. And well, here we also return a function of it. So let's just define it like that. And here's an example. We apply this operator to the sine function. So the argument is just sine. It's not sine of x. And then we evaluate it at x. And then it's cosine xx plus x sine of x, right? It's just f prime plus xx, right? Sine, derivative is cosine. And the second term, x times f of x, becomes x times sine of x. Yes?
Can you do that just with a hash, like without using function?
Yes, I could also use hash. I introduced the hash earlier, and here I'm a bit more explicit because hash is often unreadable. I wanted to use hash earlier because you're going to encounter it, so I wanted you to suffer for 5 minutes, and now I'm going to make it legible.
Can you show how to do this one with hash?
With hash? Sure. Op1 AF. Let's just use copy and paste. just replace x by hashes, and ampersand. Oh no, let's call it op1a, and that should be the same one. Let's try it. So this should now be the same. Oof, yes.
I meant write the operator as a hash.
The operator as hash.
Yeah.
Okay, now it's getting complicated because we actually have two things, right? We have x and f, but we can do that as well. Happy to oblige. So let's copy it into the wrong spot. Need to delete this one here. So I need to replace f by hash. So this becomes, oh man, hash prime plus hash. Now it looks like this. Now I keep the function and so on syntax for f. And the pudding. Yes, it works as well.
Mm. I'm almost happy. Can you also get rid of the other function?
That's probably can, but it's complicated. I mean, if you have a function with two arguments, that's possible. But here you need to I need to define a function in the function, and then if I want to write hash in the interior function, it's not clear whether it's x or f. And I've never tried that before. Okay. So we can try later, but this is why I wrote function and not hash. But thank you for making my point here. Okay, let me delete those two here. It's not so confusing. Now, the advantage of being explicit of what is an operator and a function is that you can apply the operator twice. So this operator op1 returns a function. So I apply operator to sine, it returns a function. I can apply the same operator again, like derivative of a derivative. And then it looks like this. I think it's correct. I mean, we can work it out when we take the derivatives and everything ourselves. But this is the advantage of being explicit and passing arguments in. Oh, I want to make a generic comment about Mathematica and programming. It's very convenient to define something and use it later. For example, A equals something or F equals something. But if you do that, you're making a definition that applies from there up to the very end. And if you have something like, for example, you have an equation and you want to solve it, and maybe later you want to resolve it, and then you define it in between, that can be very confusing. So the best style I find is where you define as few things as possible. For example, if you want to apply an operator to a function f, you would not first define f and then write op1 equals and then just use the value f in the terms of a global variable. It's best to keep things explicit and pass things as arguments. Now, if you don't know what I mean, then it's difficult to explain it, because you kind of need kind of Mathematica notebooks that are 100 lines long before you encounter the confusion and then you know what is wrong. But when you get confused about which things are defined and which things are not defined, then maybe one of your colleagues here can help you and can point to that statement, and maybe you will give it a try then, since I mentioned it. Let's define a different way. Let's look at the different way of defining this operator, where we pass two arguments, f and x. It's the same function as above, the same definition than up here, except operator f of x doesn't return a function. It returns the function already evaluated at x. So it performs the same operation, but additionally, it evaluates it as x. And here, you see, we write operator of sine of x. We have to apply two arguments, kind of cumbersome. We can avoid that. Here, we just call operator sine at x and once. So it seems more convenient. But then, if you want to chain this operator and define it twice, it becomes complicated. First, we write this operator with a sine function. Then we get a function that depends on x, but it's not a function. We have it evaluated at x. Now we need to turn it into function again. So we need to write function and so on. And this is now way more complicated. Now this whole expression here has the same meaning as this one up here, except it's more complicated. What I want to say here, that sometimes it's elegant to work with functions and not with functions evaluated at x. And on a blackboard, we write f of x, and it looks, but we really mean it's a function, and we take a derivative, and it works all fine because it's a blackboard and everybody has the context. But in Mathematica, it doesn't. And you need to think about whether you want a function or a value. And in this case, using a function is more elegant. Now, there's another way of taking the derivative. Up here, I used prime. This prime operator takes a derivative, and it takes as input a function. I also showed you how to take a derivative with d, the d operator, the derivative operator. That takes as input an expression and a variable. So here, so the difference between a function is you don't care about the function name. But you have an expression, for example, sine of x, you can take a derivative with respect to x. But if you have just the function sine, you just take the derivative x never enters. So if you use this d thing, you need, then it just gets a bit more complicated. This is what I showed down here. So, and you would call d like this. So the input is now not sine, but sine of x and x. And then you can take a derivative. And this is getting complicated now. I'll probably show you an inconsistency down here. Anyway, my time is almost up. What I wanted to do here is show you the different ways you can represent a function. You can either just say sine of x and remember that x is supposed to vary, and that's what we do on a blackboard, and that's the bad idea in Mathematica. Or you can say a function is f and define it properly as a function, which is the thing we did up here, where we just call it the sine, and that in the long term, if you have complicated expressions, leads to simpler code. I forgot to evaluate this one here. I'm sorry. I don't know what I meant with this expression down here. I didn't review my notes properly. Very good. So this was a bit of preaching about functions and how to represent functions internally. Are you still interested in hearing about lists, or should we postpone it? OK. Very good. This manipulation. This is now much simpler in a certain sense. Since the distinction between functions and variables is a bit convoluted the way it's usually presented in undergrad physics courses. OK. Yeah, I'm making the same point here about functions versus expressions. We can maybe skip that up here. When you simplify expressions, you can make certain assumptions that Mathematica takes into account. If you simplify the term square root of x squared, then Mathematica does not simplify that, because x could be a complex number. If you say dollar assumptions is a global variable, say that x is a real number, and then simplify it, then it becomes the absolute value of x. If you tell Mathematica instead that x is non-negative, then simplification will return x. So you need to be careful about what assumptions you have. And sometimes you might have an assumption that certain things are integers or are positive or something, and you need to tell Mathematica about it. Otherwise, simplifying won't work. So let's undo all the assumptions we make. You can have conditionals in Mathematica. There's this if function. The first is a conditional. And the result, the value of the if function, is either the second or the third argument, depending on whether that conditional is true. If 1 is larger than 2, AB, the result is B, since 1 larger 2 is false. And in this case, if A larger than B, the result is 1. Otherwise, it's 2. The result is unevaluated, because Mathematica doesn't know whether A is larger than B. And you can also use a more complicated form of if, which is called which has a series of expressions. And then you can define matrices that have a more complex form. If I equals 1 and j equals 1, the result is 1. Otherwise, if I equals 1, the result is 2. Otherwise, if j equals 1, the result is 3. Else, true, that's always the case, the result is 0. So you have 1 here in the top left corner. The first row is 1. The first column is 3. And otherwise, the result is just 0. Functions versus expression, the same thing as above, maybe presented more elegantly, not as confusing. So sine is a function. Sine of x is a value. Sine of hash is a function again. So sorry, this is a value. This is a function again. And this is a value again. So this sine of hash and then ampersand translated into function is a function again. This is the same as with hash above. A derivative d of sine with respect to x is 0, because d looks an expression. The expression sine does not depend on x. It's just the function. So the derivative with respect to x is 0. If you take sine of x and take a derivative with respect to x, you get cosine of x. Derivative is the long form for the apostrophe I used earlier. This is the derivative of the sine function with respect to its first argument, which is cosine. And if you put x in there, then it's cosine of x. And this is a strange thing. This says this takes sine of x as a function. Sine of x is not a function, right? It's just the value. But it interprets it as a function and then takes a derivative with respect to its first argument. Since it doesn't make sense, Mathematica doesn't know what to do with it and just returns it unevaluated. So this just assumes that sine of x returns a function and it will then take a derivative of that function. I don't know what x is. Maybe some strange algebra, and then sine of x will actually be a function. Let's skip that down here. Let's talk about lists. Internally, Mathematica uses lists. And even if you have expressions that are essentially lists with a special head, for example, plus 1, 2, 3 is just the list of the function of the numbers 1, 2, 3 with a particular head plus. So range is a function that creates just a list of numbers. You can take the first element of a list, the last element. You can take three elements. You can drop the first five elements. And each of these things, none of these actually modify list. That they just take list and return a new list that is modified. You can append something to a list. You can combine two lists with join. If you have a nested list, you can flatten it. You can partition lists in groups of three. And of course, there's lots of documentation regarding lists. And what does this do? Oh, this takes the list we just defined and evaluates it. So it takes the fifth and the third element. So this is the same as array indexing, but if you pass a list of array indices, you get a list of values out. In this case, you take the fifth and the third element, but this is what you get as a list. There is pattern matching. So we have list, which is still the list of the numbers of 1 to 10. And we select elements from a list. And this is the condition. And the condition is larger than 5 as a function. So we get all the numbers that are larger than 5. Here, we get all the numbers that are 0 modulo 2. That's the even numbers. You can define a second list that consists of 1, 2, 3, x, y, z, blah, 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 blah. And the last one is y8. That is a variable name y with an index 8. And k-says takes elements of a list not based on a function that is true or false, but based on patterns. So here we get from list 2 all the integers, which is just 1, 2, 3. Here we get all the elements that match the pattern something squared, which is just x squared. Here we get a list of all the patterns that match a squared times b, which is x squared y. Here we get all the elements that match something to the something power, which is x squared and x cubed. And here we get all the elements that contain either y or z, which is just y and z. And all these pattern matching and replacement rules can be very useful if you want to define your own algebra on certain expressions. You can replace lists, and that's then the bottom of my talk here. List 2 in tree form looks like this. Can you read that? Let me increase the size of the font. The elements 1, 2, 3, x, y, z are just regular. Then z and power are run together here, and the graphics shouldn't matter. Then power is x squared. That's represented as a power. And then x squared y is this one here. That is a product of x squared and y. And y8 is represented as a subscript expression of y and 8. So if you take list 2 and replace x by 4, then all the x's are replaced by 4. Then it looks like this. Obviously, x squared, x cubed is replaced. Here, replacing x to the nth by x to n plus 1 for any n. So x remains x, because you think x is x to the first power, but it isn't, because it doesn't match that pattern. It just uses pattern matching. But x squared matches that pattern, so that becomes x cubed. X cubed becomes x to the fourth, and that was x squared y, that becomes x cubed y. Here, replace all integer n by 2n. It does what you do, but very surprisingly, y8 becomes y16, because that subscript contained an integer here. And here, it replaces every term by 2a plus 1. And as you see, it only acts on the top level terms. It doesn't recurse further down. It just does it one. Whenever a pattern matches, it does the replacement, and it ignores all the subtrees further below. There are ways to do it differently. And here, we also have a condition. It replaces all a that match the condition a is not equal 1 to 0. And in this case, you have the first term is 1. Let this output list 2 here. So it does not get replaced. 2 and 3 are not equals to 1, so they do get replaced. X and y, well, Mathematica doesn't know whether they're equal to 1 or not. So in this case, they are not equals to 1, so they do not get replaced. What? What's
x to the 0.
No, this is, what is going on? X squared?
2 is not equal to 1, so it gets.
Oh, yes, thank you. Very good, thank you. So this replaces the 2 in x squared by 0, and x to the 0 is then simplified to 1. And y8 gets changed to y0. Yeah, so pattern matching can be confusing. Very good, very good. So that concludes my presentation today. And we'll have a tutorial in the afternoon where you can play with Mathematica. I assume my experience from last year tells me that half of you will want to do something else, since you know Mathematica, find it boring. And for the others, we can go through the notebook again, or also have some cool things with image recognition and so on that you can do if you have a camera there in your laptop. So we'll meet at 3:45 in the workroom. And we'll see how long it takes. Tutorial Mathematica. See you then.